Shalom and welcome, everybody. Shalom and welcome to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting live from Jerusalem to the world. You're part of it wherever you are. And shalom and welcome to life. Yes, it's great to be alive. Thank you, God. And there are so many tensions and issues, and just the fact that you've given us life is such a gift. I just want to take a second with the tensions and the kids and the money and the health and the brushing of the teeth, all that stuff. It's all good. Thank you, God, for the little things, including the great little parking spot that opened up right in front of me. And we all know that you're the God of parking. You helped our people park in the desert so many times. And right here when I was coming to Sulam Yaakov in beautiful Nachlaot, Jerusalem, I was in a rush. And yet right in front of me, like the splitting of the Red Sea, a big van pulled out, more than enough space for my car to park. Thank you, God, for giving parking in modern Jerusalem. And if I am here at Pardes, that means I'm also here with Rabbi Mike Foyer. Rabbi Mike, shalom.
Oh, I love the image of God parting the waters for your car.
That's right. That's what happened. And you know what? Yes. Yes, he does. And here I have to quote Rabbi Chaim Richman, who once said to me, why is it that the Christians always can say things like, God spoke to me? He's like, no, God spoke to me. I'm Jewish. God spoke to me. And like, I see God in the little things. And so, yeah. Like,
we as a people are stuck in our heads.
You know, and maybe we're like a little embarrassed. Sometimes people are like, do you think you're chosen? I'm like, oh, well, chosen.
That's an awkward word.
I mean, yeah, Mamlechet Kohanim v'Goy Kadosh, you know, a kingdom of priests and a holy convocation nation, whatever. But yeah, you know, but chosen to serve, to minister, as Rabbi Mike would say. Right? So we get a little bit embarrassed about that. Like, God spoke to me.
It's an edgy concept.
Right. What does that mean, God spoke to me? But like, no, you know what? No, God did speak to me, and that's okay because he's that big. We're actually little, I don't want to use the word, but we're little like, we're
specks of dust in the universe.
Right. And with a little like brain that popped the top of a bag with, you know, meat and fluid and God gives us, and he wants to talk to us, and that's awesome.
And the thing to remember is just because we can't understand how that works doesn't mean it's not true.
Right, right, absolutely. Now, by the way, and this leads me to something else. First thing, let me just say that we're, of course, on the Land of Israel Network, the Land of Israel Network. And the Land of Israel Network has great shows that kept me company when I was in America, including your show, The Jewish Story. And you're now in a campaign to...
That's right. We're looking for 36 new supporters by the 8th night of Hanukkah. You know how many candles there are on the Hanukkah?
36.
That's right, because people always count the Shamash. Poor guy. He ought to be left out. Right, so people can go to my Facebook page. They'll see the campaign there. That's Rav Mike Foyer there on Facebook. You can send me an email at ravmikefoyer@gmail.com. Or you can go straight to Patreon, patreon.com/mfoyer, and hit that I want to be a patron button.
That's awesome. And also the rest of the shows. I love Josh Haston's show, Gil Hoffman, of course. And we have Eve, and we have... Rabbi Shlomo Katz and Ari and Jeremy. Just great stuff on this network. Kept me company when I was driving out to see my friend Cynthia out in the middle of, past Sacramento over there. Really beautiful land, by the way. Beautiful land. I got to see some very beautiful land.
The fires out?
There was no fires. I didn't see any fires. But I saw, just beautiful land. But, of course, made me miss home. And the radio station, the podcast station, kept me going. That was a lot of fun. So we want to thank God for this radio station.
Amen.
And I got a last week's show. I was in San Francisco and I did this event with Russian Jews, and I talked about how Russian Jews see things, and I interviewed the ladies who are the founders of Club Z, which is a teen Zionist movement, Russian movement. And I got an email from an Orthodox Jew who through my Facebook account, Yishai Fleischer, and basically he was accusing me of being too into the fact that the Jewish people are an ethnicity with rights, as opposed to being a godly people, and the only reason that we have national status is because we serve God, we believe in God, we keep His Torah, the whole, side of it, which says, there is a religious, godly goal, and that's the only reason that you have any kind of, independent existence. And, of course, he's right. Right? Of course he's right that the whole point, and how do I know, of course, it says, because the Torah is replete with it. I will keep you as a nation, basically, if you keep my commandments. Abraham is going to be blessed with a nation because he followed and will teach his children the commandments. And And I, you know, I feel very, I feel that I know that's true, but there's a part of me, and I can feel what that part of is. That part is like a part of my brain, which has a name. It's called Jabotinsky, you know? And it's like sits in my head hard, and I hear his voice in my head, and he says, and that that way of thinking says, Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. Yes, there is a Torah, but before there's a Torah, there's also practical, plain, pragmatic, basic, foundational things. And self-determination for the Jewish people as a people in their homeland is a, it's something that we have to all get around. We have to, we have to, we have to buy into. And on top of that, yes, of course, we're a holy nation. But the basics is bring my people home, defend them. We have rights to this land, historic rights and other rights, and then build the religious consciousness on top of that. One could say that's wrong. One could say the whole foundation is the godly thing, and therefore the national thing takes away, cheapens, somehow hides, you know,
dilutes.
The, well, yeah,
distracts
kind of, yeah,
from,
right, right, like puts it to the corner, and I can hear that argument. But what is it in my head that feels so strongly that we do have to identify ourselves as also an ethnicity and a people? And that will build our religious consciousness afterwards.
Well, I'm going to see your Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. I'm going to raise you one. Because I think that one of the biggest challenges we face with people today is the mistake that we make in relating a one-to-one equation between religion and Torah. Mm-hmm. Right? Meaning the Judaism is an amazing, glorious adventure of the last 3,000 or more years. But it is a drop in the bucket compared to what the Torah has to offer us. Right. Now, I'm not saying that it can be dismissed or done away with, but my point is that it's kind of like, imagine that you had a seed. You had a seed that you'd planted in every kind of soil you could imagine. That's the Torah. You planted it in Babel. You planted it in Germany. You planted it in Poland, in North Africa, etc. And you've gotten different types of oak trees out of this seed. But what you don't realize is that when you plant it in its native soil, it's not even an oak at all. There's something fantastic that will grow from that. And the problem is there's a lack of imagination. And I also wonder what's behind someone trying to call you out on the overemphasis of ethnicity when, as I know you, as I hope this person knows you, because they didn't, they shouldn't have opened their mouth, you're a deeply religious and committed person.
No, and, but, and, that's, but, and that's what he was saying, though. He's like, you are a deeply committed religious person, so why are you not challenging this identification as an ethnic?
Because, as you rightly said, all of Am Yisrael inherited the Torah. And the biggest challenge we face today is that there's only a small portion of Am Yisrael that sees it as its birthright. You know, and, you know, the birthright program that has done an amazing thing to bring Jews here to the land of Israel. There, I'm at Pardes. My mission is I have a birthright program into the Torah.
Right.
And in order to get people into the Torah, you cannot force them into a box of what you think it says. Even if you think you're right, even if you have thousands of years of interpretive tradition to prove that you're right, you'll never get them in. And if you don't get them in, then we will fail as a people.
That's a very good point. I really like that concept of birthright into the Torah. I like that. I think you should develop that concept, by the way. I will add also that I am chafing at the identification of the Jewish people, the Jewish thing, as a religion.
You should be.
Vis-a-vis like an American assimilationist thing. What happens is when you identify Judaism, if I'm Jewish because I do or do not keep kosher, the minute I do not keep kosher, I'm out.
Ipso facto, you're not Jewish.
Right, and I'm out, and I assimilate out. And yep, that is one of the main reasons for assimilation, other than the fact that America is philo-Semitic and not anti-Semitic in general. But if I don't identify as a Semite, right?
Then who cares whether they're philo or anti?
Right, if I identify as a person who does or does not keep Sabbath, then therefore I have nothing special about me inherently, or not even special, but different or unique or ethnic. And so to know, what I'm saying is to know, to have an ethnic designation is also to know that Jewish people are Jewish.
They're people regardless of what they do.
Right, right.
Listen, our master and teacher, Rav Avraham Yitzchak Cohen Cook, taught very clearly that what we think of as religion is a product of exile. And that redemption involves the return of the unity between our national ideal and our godly ideal. Religion is a critical part of that, but it's not the sum total.
I heard a great talk, by the way, by Ben-Zion Klatsko. Mm-hmm. Very important dude. Mm-hmm. He's the founder of Shabbat.com.
Uh-huh.
And also manages Olami, which is the big Kirov movement in America today. Uh-huh. This dude, this rabbi, is
he's got it going on.
Wow. Something else. Ben-Zion Klatsko. And I heard him speaking at Limud, which was great for me. And I heard him speaking to a room full of secular Jews. And he was saying, like, he was talking like your talk, and he did a great job. He said basically, like, if we teach that Judaism is a religion, it's going to be unattractive.
Would you all walk out of the room?
Right. But he's like, it's a relationship. Yep. And he gave a great, great example. He's like, he goes to the room, what's the holiest place in the world? They're like, Israel. I'm like, yep, Israel. He's like, what's the holiest city? Jerusalem. What's the holiest place? The Temple Mount. What's the holiest place in that? The Holy of Holies. He's like, okay, now if let's say you took a needle and put it right into the middle, like you stuck a needle through the Holy of Holies, what would there be? The Ark of the Covenant. And the Ark of the Covenant has these two cherubs. What are these two cherubs about? One is man, one is woman. They look at each other. Like, the center of the Jewish world is love and relationship. It was just great. And he did it longer than I just did it. But it was just such a, it was like,
no, it's
I don't
very
know,
important
it stuck
image.
In my head. Yeah, it stuck in my mind. Like, love, it's the heart of it all. Anyway, friends, all right, listen. You're listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show. Lots of stuff going on in life. Lots of speed out there. But we have to also take speed now and hit. I don't mean take speed.
I was wondering where you're going.
That
at.
Is not what I meant. I meant go get into
my
gear.
My children might be listening to this.
Right, go into gear. Although, like, speed is legal today. All you have to say is
I have,
you know,
some focus issues. Right?
they're like no problem.
They're like, here you go.
Me and these big
Dr. Feelgood.
Right, me and these big companies will make some money and we'll give you this speed.
And you'll be productive until you burn out at age 45.
Right. But we have to take a little bit of speed, as we said, and we have to go to this Torah portion, which is filled, chock filled, with incredible and foundational stories, okay? Really key stories to the Jewish people. We're going to go through them. And what I want to do, Rabbi Mike, in the time that we have, is to do a what we call in Hebrew a negiah, a touching, a comment or two on every one of the stories.
All right, I'm ready.
All right, the first story, first thing, we're in the Torah portion of Vayishlach, which is chapter 32 in the book of Genesis. And basically, the story is the return of Jacob from the 20 years of exile of his time working for the house of Laban, and also getting married to two women plus two handmaidens, right? The matriarchs of the Jewish people, Rachel and Leah, Bilhah and Zilpah. And he's coming back now with his whole flock, literally, and family as well.
They are a tribe.
They're a big, big old young tribe, and they're coming back into the land of Israel, the promised a return is taking place. But before we actually have a nice old return, and we're going to see that all these returns are not as easy as you think, right? It's not all as...
not so simple to go home.
Right, it's not so simple to go home. That's a big lesson for us today. It's not like always like light and easy. And the first hurdle, and they're basically, if you think about it, maybe it's a Torah portion of hurdles. The first hurdle is the hurdle of ye old brother Esav, right?
Who last we saw planning to kill him as Jacob left town with the dust flying from his heels.
And he's right, and he's got like a pirate's accent when Jacob comes back. When my father dies and Jacob's come back, I swear I'll kill him.
That's right.
Right?
He's been stewing on it for 20 years.
Right? And his mother, remember, interesting, Rivka says that he's going to forget about it. I always wonder, I don't know what the meaning of that comment is. I mean, because she's a prophetess and nothing that comes out of her mouth is meaningless. What does it mean that he's going to forget? It's hard for me to understand what she means by that. But in any case, here he comes to the land of Israel and he knows that he's going to face his brother, and there's a repetition recurrently here of my brother, your brother, his brother. Esav is Yaakov's brother.
His twin, no less.
His twin. And basically news comes that indeed Esav is coming towards you, and guess what's got 400 people with him? Dun dun dun.
Big bad hairy men.
Right, they're right. It's like, well, what is it? Just a 400 guys coming with him? What do they play, play domino a lot, or what?
He doesn't like to be alone.
Right. Or maybe it's a war party, right? And a posse, and they're coming to do a hanging. I'm mixing all kinds of metaphors here. But in any case, Yaakov is nervous. It says that he was Vayar Yaakov Meod. He was very afraid. Vayetzerlo, his innards like bothered him. Vayachatz et ha'am. He divides his nation. This is one of the themes. For defensive purposes, he's going to divide his camp. If one gets wrecked, the other one will stay alive. Just like those funny people who say, if Israel gets nuked, at least there'll be American Jewry. That's why we have to stay out here, right? Whatever, I'm not going to comment on that. Anyway.
Let's not go there.
Yeah, so that's what he says. And he prays to God. Just this morning, this famous prayer. I listened to it as a song by Yonatan Razel.
Uh-huh.
From this neighborhood here, right? From Nachlaot.
Sure.
There's a very famous song. I thought maybe to stick it in a minute here, 15. Katonti mikol ha-chasadim u-mikol ha-emet asher asita et avdecha.
Well
right?
done.
Okay. So the song there is that Yaakov says, God, I have become small from all the goodness and kindness and truth that you have bestowed upon me. Or I am small as compared to the great kindness and truth. There's two different opinions.
Or maybe I've worn out all my merits from all the goodness and kindness that you've done to me.
Right, like every time you give me a goodness, like my little energy bar
thing
goes,
on your battery goes down.
Right, so you're like, however it is, save me now from my brother, from Esav, for I am afraid of him. He may come and kill me, kill us, children and women, meaning to say the whole kit and caboodle. And you promised to do good for me. Anyway. Before he faces off with Esav himself, he ends up. Well, first he prepares the gifts. He sends these gifts, and the gifts here. This is classic Yaakov, right? Don't send all the gifts at one time. Make him look bigger, right? Use a little bit of deception by. It's not deception. Use marketing, right?
Yes.
By another free gift and another free gift, and he sends these gifts towards Esav. But in the meantime, and he wants to kind of like
appease
him, right? He might be still a little bit residually angry about that whole thing.
The whole 400 men thing, yeah.
Right, so...
There's reason to suspect this is not going to go well.
Right. That night, we know that Yaakov is very nervous. He's afraid. He goes to sleep at night. Somehow, he ends up by himself. And then somebody comes and struggles with him.
And that's, I think, where we need to make the little nigiyah, the touch on this, is that who is it that Yaakov is struggling with through the night?
Right. So the famous explanation is that it's the minister of Esav. It's the angel of Esav.
Right. In the minds of our sages, nations are not just sort of random sociological formations. They are existential entities, and each one has its guardian angel. So this was Sarah Shel Esav, and which they also see, by the way, as the Malach HaMavet and as the Yetzirah. He's also the angel of death. He's also the evil inclination, because the rabbis love to just pile it on, especially when it comes to Esav. But in pshat, in the simple reading, who's he struggling with?
Well,
read the line.
Right. The line is that it says, "Vayivater Yaakov levado." Jacob is alone.
He was left alone. Right.
Ish imo. But at the same time, a person struggled with him ad alot hashachar, until the dawn.
So if he's left alone and he struggles with a man until morning, who's he struggling with?
He's struggling with himself.
Clearly.
Himself, right.
Now, it's so important here because remember, Esav and Yaakov aren't just brothers, they're twins. Right? And these are the two paths by which we can go. And Yaakov is not certain who he is. You know, this is the night when he's finally got to go back and face the mess that he left behind him. Let's right. face it. He left a mess behind right. him. And even though he's now got four wives and 10 kids or 11 kids at 12, actually, cute count his daughter, right? And he is a clan and God has spoken to him. Somewhere inside himself, he's just still not sure who he is because he's still Yaakov. He goes around, right? He takes the crooked path when instead of going straight forward. In the end of this battle, he receives a new identity.
Right. So he's gonna struggle with this angel or himself, part of himself. Both are true, by the way. They're not mutually exclusive. You could totally understand it as both struggles. And we think about it. We oftentimes, like here in Israel, are we struggling against our enemies or are we struggling with ourselves?
Well, that to me is very clear. I believe our enemies are symptomatic. And in fact, it's a great example we were bringing to is that to the degree that we don't know who we are, the external manifestation of the world is filled with enemies and confusion and people who are attempting to steal our narrative and our birthright. If we were able to struggle within ourselves and come up with a clear identity and a message, I believe it doesn't mean that enemies would necessarily disappear, but certainly we could overcome them with ease.
Right. But at the same time, you don't want to give a pass to the enemies. They're being bad guys. I'm just saying you have both. That's all I'm saying. I'm saying that at the same moment.
They still need to be defeated.
Right. At the same moment, it's the struggle with yourself and struggle with an external thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that makes sense of what we're dealing with here. Anyway, but at the end, Jacob, he first thing, he gets hurt in this battle.
That's right. He doesn't walk away clean.
Right. He's going to get this. His hip joint is going to get hip socket is going to get dislocated, and later on he's going to limp on this kind of broken socket. And at the same time, he's going to defeat this angel. He's going to hold him f- fast.
He's got him in a what's it called? A not a headlock.
Full Nelson.
He's got a submission hold. That's right, what I was like. He's got him in a submission hold.
Very good. Very good. I like that. Very good. Submission hold. He's got him in a submission hold. That's a good name for the show. I hope I remember that submission hold. I like that very much. But he says, and this angel or whoever has got to flee. Either it's time to wake up and no longer can you face yourself, or it's time to
sing praises to the Lord.
Right. So what happens is he's like, all right, let me go. I won't let you go until you bless me. And he says, okay, well, guess what? A little preview.
Foreshadowing.
Your name is not going to be Jacob anymore. It's going to be Israel. You're going to get the new name. So through the struggle, he's told that he's going to get the new name. It's important for me that people know that actually he gets he gets the full confirmation of that name later on in Beit El. That's one of the things I used to tell people in Beit El. I'm like, in Beit El, I lived in Beit El.
I made it.
So I used to say people.
I stayed with you there once.
Oh, yeah? Oh, my gosh. I don't remember. You have to remember.
A long time ago.
So Beit El, you know, I used to tell people, like, this is the place where Israel got the name Israel. Like, that's how important this place is. And in Marat HaMachpelah, I'm like, this is where Israel's buried, okay?
And the two don't contradict.
No, they don't. They don't. They certainly don't.
I bet there are a bunch of leftists out there saying this is where Israel was buried, too.
Ooh, where?
In Hebron.
Yeah, they want to bury us here. That's right. That's absolutely right. Yaakov gets this foreshadowing, and then he goes on, and then basically we're still in the first story. The first story that we got to deal with in this Torah portion is the facing of Esav, this brother, right? And then now that he's had this struggling match with this minister angel or with himself, maybe he's defined better who he is, or maybe he's already beaten the angel of Esav. He is now ready to face Esav, and these gifts are being passed in front of the camp of Yaakov. Also, he divides the women folk. He puts the maidservants first, then Leah and her children last, and then Rachel and her children last.
Yeah, it's achron achron chaviv, as they say, the last for the best. It's an awkward. Listen, this is one of the deep challenges that I have in Yaakov's character. He shamelessly favors the people that he loves,
right?
And it causes endless problems in his family. And it's one of the things that I just take in stride, saying, okay, the Torah is telling us about a real person who had a real life, and you need to learn from the fact that much of the pain he experienced within his family unit was because he loved unreservedly, but that he was not wise in how he distributed that love.
So Rabbi Yitzchak Et Shalom takes your point, and he thinks that in Devarim, when it says the laws of not marrying two sisters, that it's a subtle critique of the way Yaakov handled the situation. I'm not going to get into it now, but I just want to say that Rabbi Et Shalom really
there's a lot
shows
to say about
Psukim. I forgot to say one thing, is that there is also the exposition of why Israel is called Israel. The name Israel, first thing is simply it's Yashar El, which is straight onto God.
Right, as opposed to Yaakov, who goes around in a crooked path.
Right, Akiv,
Lakov Achar.
Right. It means, in any case, it means kind of a more crooked path,
the indirect
path. And now you have this other side of you. And to me, I always like to, when I speak to high schools, I like to say that's our Superman name. Yaakov is our Clark Kent name. You know, just a mild mannered, tent dwelling. Shepherd, and our other side is Israel, which is the super name of our people, and that's really like that Clark Kent Israel, Superman side. That's really Yaakov to me. Like he's got these two sides, but the reason that the Torah tells us for this name is of Israel is Ki Sarita im Elohim v'im Anashim v'tuchal, because you struggled with gods, i.e., powers, and with people, and you could. You have a struggle. Yehuda Cohen, a good friend, had a show on Arut Sheva back then. It was called The Struggle. That was his show name, you know? There's a struggle. And that's what this is. You struggled with me, says the angel. Your name is a person who struggles and wins at the end.
I mean, it's a fundamental difference that we're clashing with Islam about. I mean, it's not for nothing that Islam means submission, right? And that our name means to struggle, that our relationship with God is one which we don't take for granted anything. And that causes much challenge at the same time. At the end of the day, it's our mission in the world because it's what will bring newness and ultimately redemption. That if God had truly wanted submission from humanity, he would have made us robots.
Right. That's right. But we also have to struggle with them today. We're in a struggle with nations. We're in a struggle with with Esav and Ishmael, and we're struggling with ourselves. Any case, here he comes. Here comes the big meeting. Here it is. They're going to face each other, and guess what? They're seeing each other from a distance, and then Esav runs towards him. I like this. It's very a pregnant word. He runs towards him. Is he running with a dagger? Or is he running to what? And it says, Vayichabkehu, and he embraced him. Again, what kind of thing is that? Embrace could be, you know, a bear hug could be a very
dangerous move.
Dangerous. Vayipol al tzavarav, and he falls upon his neck, meaning to say this is a kind of cry, a kind of embrace. Vayishakehu, and he kissed him. And there's these special dots atop of the Torah. This, you're not going to find this in the King James, and you're not going to find this in the Gideon's Bible, okay? Over the word, and he kissed him, has these specific six dots that are part of our tradition. And then it says, Vayifku, they both cried. But Vayishakehu, the rabbis say that he tried to bite him. He tried to bite him, that Esav tried to dig like a deep, bad bite. And into the neck of Yaakov. You're making a face.
Well, I am, because it's one. It's interesting. That is true. That is one thing it says. But
right.
But you know, this is where Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the master of the Zohar, learns halacha psuka Esav sonet Yaakov. That this is where he learns it is an existential fact that Esav hates Yaakov. But in this moment, that he kissed him with his whole heart. Mm-hmm. Right, so it's a fascinating vision. It's a very important one for us today to remember, is that there is such a thing as an existential battle which can be resolved through a true meeting with other. I feel very much in my own life, I've come to this stance with Christianity, which was very hard for me for reasons that we don't need to go into right now. And I feel like that there is a whole aspect of Esav, of the Christian world today, that is actually ready to embrace Am Yisrael in reality. And to transform what has been up till now an existential struggle into one of love and partnership in the world. It's an amazing thing.
There's definitely I would be a tad more reserved, and I would say, in my opinion, that there is a budding of that.
Okay.
There's a budding of that. I think we should be more cautious. In fact, I was just with my mom, God bless her, and she was telling me, you know, my mom's a Russian speaker, and she says in the Russian media right now, the Putin's assistance to the Eastern Orthodox Church to rise has led to an incredible flood of Russian anti-Semitism.
I'm not thinking about Europe. I was thinking about America.
Right.
That's fair enough.
Exactly. That's what I mean. I mean, like, American Christianity is really, I would say, a small.
Unique. Yeah. And it's unique.
Right. Any case, but here's my favorite. You want to hear my favorite?
Please.
This is one of my favorite things in general. It says, Vayishakehu, and he kissed him, but the rabbis say, and he bit him. That's not fair. That's not fair.
You can't chase things like that.
Right, you know who says that? It says the Sfat Emet, the Sfas Emes. He says, rabbis, God bless you, with all respect, you cannot change a kiss to a bite. That's not fair. That's not what it says in the Torah. It says you kissed him and you said you bit him. It can't be. So he says, no. What's meant by that is Esav's kiss is his greatest bite.
Ooh.
When he's your best friend, when he wants to hug you and love you, and he's philo-Semitic, that is a dangerous moment.
Ooh.
That is a dangerous moment, says the Sfat Emet. And if you read it that way, then you see the rest of this chapter is Esav is like, let's hang out.
Yeah.
He says, no thanks. He says, you know, let's
I'll
walk
go
together.
With you.
Well, I got to walk slower than you.
I'll leave some men behind.
No thanks. No necessary. Not necessary. Thanks. We'll catch up later. Okay, buddy?
I'll see you soon.
Great to see you. Okay. Bye.
Bye. Be 3,000 years.
Right. And that is and if you think about America on the one hand is a great country which has really embraced us.
Absolutely.
And really, when I'm in America, I am honestly thankful. Really, I am thankful, oftentimes in a real way, not in just words. I'm saying, thank you, America. But on the other hand, philo-Semitism has done a lot of damage to us in terms of first thing of intermarriage, in terms of loss of identity. And then it hides also with all that philo-Semitism. I ask America sometimes, so why is it that you house the United Nations, which is the worst anti-Semitic global organization, and you fund and house this organization in your? I mean, say
well, because it's about more than the Jews. Come on, the United Nations is about way more than the Jews.
Of course, and yet, where's the true censuring of it? Where's the true saying I'm not going to stand for that.
Okay.
I just mean to say there's more than meets the eye. That's all. And sometimes the embrace can be a dangerous bite.
Yeah.
Let's think about it. Let's not overly
think about.
We'll think about it. All right. So basically, there's this amazing meeting point, and as we said, there's a separation finally, And he comes out of this moment, which he was so nervous about, in flying colors. And in fact, the next phrase is, after this segment, is that Yaakov came where? To Shechem, where his father first came, where Joshua's going to first come. He's going to come first to Shechem. Shalem. Ve'avo Yaakov Shalem. He comes whole with what he owns, a hole in his body. In fact, Rashi says that he was even able to heal from his limp. And everything seems honky-dory.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Right? It's like, okay.
Whew, I was worried about that. I've been worried about it for 20 years. I mean, it's got to be, by the way, an incredible sense of euphoria that filled him. He'd been worried about this moment for 20 years.
Right.
And it could have been everything. This could have been it.
I got through Laban. I got through Lavan. I'm home. I'm heading to see my papa. I got my wives. I got my kids. I dealt with this big, bad Esav.
Yep.
And like, dude, let's chill.
Yeah.
Let's just chill.
And that's what he does. Behan Bnei Ayil. He camps out. He settles in.
Right. He settles in.
Perhaps buys himself a piece of land.
Right. He buys himself Shechem, which is later going a plot in Shechem, which is later going to be the tomb of Joseph later on. But in any case, and this is an important thing, this is the second purchase in the land of Israel. However, when things seem chill, well, they just ain't for the Jewish people. Because remember, your name is Yisrael now. You're not. Nobody called you Mr. Chiller.
Yeah, there is no rest.
Right, not in this world. There is no rest. Not in this world.
Not in the next either.
Right, probably not in the next either. So the next big story in this Torah portion is the story of Dina. And Dina is a gal who goes to kind of see the land. She's the daughter of Jacob. And guess what? She is taken forcibly by Shechem ben Hamor, Shechem the son of Hamor, from the city of Shechem. His name is Shechem. His father's name is Donkey. That's kind of a harsh name, but that's his name. He's like, in any case, he's a Hivite. Is that the way to say it?
Chivi.
In English, he's a Hivite. In any case, he takes this girl and he forcibly is it a rape exactly?
Seems so in the simple language of right. the
well
Sufim.
it's not in it's a language of inui is kind of
it's non-consensual.
Non-consensual, some kind of torturous thing. However, he actually falls in love with her after this thing. And in the mystical tradition there's a lot going on here.
Yeah, this story has many layers to it. But one thing, it's worth it to note one of the ways our rabbis connected the two, and not to put too much pressure on Yaakov, but if you're going to carry the name of Yisrael, then you need to strive to be perfect at least. So one of the ways the sages explain the juxtaposition of these two, I mean, he was euphoric. He just got through that great struggle and he got away clean. But they say in the Midrash that he hid Dina in a box in order that Esav not see her, because he was afraid that if Esav saw her, he would say, oh, you have a daughter, let me marry her, our families will be one again, and he didn't want to. And the rabbis say he was punished with this whole episode because he held back his daughter from Esav, and she could have returned him to the good. Which is a very important thing to remember, that the relationship between Yaakov and Esav, ultimately between Am Yisrael and the world as a whole, is we're trying to bring the world toward the good. And that involves some serious sacrifices. And if we're not willing to make those sacrifices, as the Parsha shows us, we're going to make them one way or another.
Wow. There's a lot to be said about that. That's a very interesting thought. And, you know, how much are we supposed to sacrifice in order to bring back to the good? How much are we supposed to be defensive, mm-hmm. not altruistic? It's a great, and there's a tension then between.
In my mind, that's a tension of this whole parsha.
Right, there's a tension between conservative and liberal also here a little bit.
We saw look at their meeting place. I'll just tell you, you should go look later at the Or Chaim HaKodesh on that pasuk that you quoted. The Yar Yaakov v'yitzelo. He was afraid and it troubled him. Or Rashi, he was afraid that he would get killed, and he was afraid lest he kill someone else. And everyone asks, like, what do you mean, afraid lest he kill someone else? It's self-defense. So you go look. I don't want to get into it now, what the Or Chaim HaKodesh
okay,
says.
Okay, very good, very good. Okay. Of course, friends, I have to remind you, we're dealing with big issues. A lot has been written on them, but we're kind of we're like a rock skipping on a lake here trying to touch the points of the Torah portion. In any case, what happens is that so Dina gets raped, and she's being held hostage. Not hostage. She's being held at the house of.
Well, it's unclear whether she was hostage. It's really unclear
right.
who she is in this story.
Right. It's hard to know. She may be sympathetic. She may be whatever it is. But the brothers of Dina, i.e., the tribes of Israel, hear about this, especially Levi and Shimon, and they hear about this, and basically they concoct a plot. And here's the plot. They say to these folks from Shechem, who, by the way, when you read the language closely of what they say, you could hear that they're not the kindest people. They're just like, we will
absorb these people into us. We'll get their wealth, and we'll marry them off and dilute them amongst us.
Right, and it's always like me, me, me. There's a narcissistic kind of element there, if you pick up on the language. But in any case, the brothers meet Ikel Tit Akal, right, with a tricky person. Be tricky, as says, I think, Mishlei. Proverbs. And what they do is that they say, sure, you can have our sister, no problem. However, you have to circumcise yourself because it's impossible for us to be close to people who are not circumcised. It's gross to us. It's just, right. It's unacceptable.
It's a disgrace.
They say the Shechemites, led by this young son, Shechem ben Hamor, and his father Hamor, speak to the people. They convince them, oh man.
Could you imagine? I thought it would be a tougher sell than that.
Yeah, you think so, right? But maybe they were like, listen, it's healthier, less communicable diseases, let's circumcise ourselves, and we'll get all their money. And it's just by the way, here's the play also is the word shalem, which is, oh, and later they say these people are shalem with us, they are whole with us. And there's like a wholeness without when you're circumcised, right? Without that circumcision, you have extra, you're actually not whole.
That's all the way back from Abraham, when God first commanded him and said, "Hitalech lefanai veheyeh tamim," go before me and you will be whole or perfect by removing something from yourself.
Right, right.
We're not going back there.
Absolutely, yeah, we were there, though. Anyway, great plot. What happens is that the Shechemites, they indeed circumcise themselves.
En masse,
right? Just piles of foreskins, that's like a biblical thing. Anyway... you remember when David was asked by Saul
to bring 300 foreskins of the Philistines as his.
I thought it was bring 100, and he brings 200. I thought it was the number.
Maybe I just confused the numbers.
I think he could bring anyway. He brings double
the
amount. That's a lot. That's a lot of foreskins to bring. Anyway,
Jewish scalping. Sorry, couldn't resist.
Oh my God, that's funny. Maybe that's the title of the show.
Oh no, please don't.
I don't know. That's a clickbait. You know what I mean? People want to click that. Anyway, so they do. They really do. So Jewish scalping. That is funny. But people will think it's dealing with tickets. Hey, you want a cheap ticket?
Oh, you anti-Semite.
Oh, please don't write me an email saying, Ishai, don't make
anti-Semitic.
Please do me a favor, okay? Just say
I
it.
Love the Jewish people.
Yeah. I'm a Jew. Okay. So anyway, what happens is that these Shechemites, later to be called Nablus, right? The same city, Shechem, today. These Shechemites, they circumcise themselves en masse. And on the third day, which is the most painful day after a surgery like this, come these two brothers. And guess what they do? They kill all the men folk. They just go into town, betach, i.e. in surety, and just destroy the town. They destroy all the menfolk and take the womenfolk and children as booty.
Spoils of the entire city.
Right, spoils. They take their sister out, and that's it. You know,
they leave a smoking ruin behind them.
Right, and Yaakov says when the news comes out, when he reads it on the Twitter or something, he's like, oh my God, what have you done? You've made me stink. You've made me look bad in the whole land. And the brothers just ask him, they kind of state, they're like, should our sister be turned into a harlot? That's the end of that. There's a point. And we never really know who's exactly right. We never know who's exactly right.
Well, Yaakov gets the last word.
He gets the last word, but I always wonder.
Yeah. Listen, the fact that he gets the last word doesn't necessarily mean who's right there. And it also doesn't mean that in every moral dilemma, there's a clean right or wrong.
Right, right. So you know, this controversy between... people who read this Torah portion and say, damn straight they were right. That town raped a Jewish girl. They deserve to be destroyed. And the other part, which is, you know, the more, let's call it just for the sake of ease of understanding, the more liberal elements in Israel say, you know, what are you going to flout international law, kill people over this, you know, crime? And
you don't have
right.
to go to law. It's just an act of severe brutality.
Severe brutality. And was this Jewish? This is not Jewish. And we had this happen to us in the Holocaust. How could we do such a thing? And you can hear this argument. So I had these discussions with friends. I didn't come down at any one point. I'm trying to figure it out. But a friend of mine, whose name is Natan Kotlarov, Russian guy, very smart guy, once told me something that I remember to this day about this Torah portion. You know what he said to me? He said,
upset.
He said, you know what Yaakov's problem was? You know why he was so upset with them? Not only because they were severely brutal, but because they used a foil about getting closer to God. They said, come closer to God. Be more perfect. Be like us. Do the Brit Milah. And in that, which is not to be
messed with, not messed to be corrupted.
Not to be corrupted. In that, they killed these people.
Yeah, fair.
That's like what he said. He said, that was wrong. He said, that was wrong. You want to have a fight? You want to have a frontal fight? Or you want to use some kind of other trick? Fine. But don't use God
as your excuse.
Right. Don't try to beautify the world and then destroy it.
That's very strong. It's a very strong point.
When he said that to me, I was like, wow. That's a great point. Any case, so the purchase of Shechem, of the land in Shechem, and then the destruction of the natives of Shechem, pretty intense stuff, and we're left with a kind of question mark between those two. What's the next story, Rabbi Mike? What's the next? Where are we at?
The next story in our parsha?
I think I remember. I remember.
Oh, you got it?
Yes. The next story is, okay, we're done with that. We're done with that, and now...
He goes back up to Beit El.
That's right. Now it's time to go to Beit El. I would say go... He's going south. He's heading from Shechem
to Beit El. That's true, actually. And I was just thinking the fact that you have to go down to get up there.
Right. You have to go a little bit down to get up.
And Shechem's probably higher than Beit El in elevation.
I'm not sure about that. I would say...
Well, the city of Shechem is actually in a bit of a valley.
It's between the mountains. Beit El's on top of the mountain.
That's true. Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
But you have to go south. He's heading south. Where is he heading, by the way? He's heading to see his dad in Hebron.
Yeah.
That's where he's heading at the end of the parsha. He's going to get there. Any case, he's going to get to Beit El. And guess what in Beit El is? That's God says to him, hey, get up and go to Beit El where you and I had that thing. We had that relationship thing. Yeah. Let's meet there. That's our special place, Yaakov.
It's closing the loop with the promises that Yaakov was able to affirm that God kept him and watched over him and gave him wealth and sustenance while he was gone. This, in many ways, is the end of the exile that Yaakov experienced going to Laban.
Right.
And it's important if you think about, in terms of what we're saying, is that you think the end of the exile would be when he came back to the land of Israel, but you would be wrong because he had to overcome all these family issues. He had to overcome that beautiful point you're making about what's his relationship between power and coming close to God. He has to overcome this challenge with Dina in order to actually be home. And I feel like, just like the Ramban teaches, Masa Avot, Siman Labanim, right? Everything that our forefathers went through is a message for us that this is the generation we live in. We're here, physically we're here, but there's a lot to overcome until we can finally be home and end the exile.
Right. And you're right, that coming to Beit El is kind of the final...
That was his departure point. That was where he said, if you take care of me and you watch over me, you will be my God. And now he's coming back saying, okay, we did it.
Right. And this is where he's going to get officially the coronation, let's call it, or the, no, what we call it, you know, you coronate a king, but what do you, when you want to give ranks, or it's a ceremony of giving over, giving a new rank in the army, they have that, or a promotion, I don't know what the right word is.
I don't know what word you're searching for.
You know, like when you place a new CEO or a new governor or something like that.
The anointing, the appointment.
The appointment. I like appointment. You get the appointment of Israel. Yeah. That's who you are going to be, because that goes with the word minister.
Yeah.
You're
appointed as a minister, sure.
Right. And he gets his name Israel there in Beit El. He has another vision there. And he calls the place El Beit El. He adds another name to it, which is God, the house of God. And you know who dies there? This Dvorah, Mia Neket Rivka. This Dvorah, who's the what? She's the nursemaid of Rivka. She dies in Beit El.
Right.
And the rabbis tell us this is actually the death of Rivka.
Well, they say, what did Dvorah have to do with Beit Yaakov? She should have been back. And they say that Rivka had sent Dvorah to bring Yaakov home, but the time was over.
Right.
That he had to be in exile, and that exactly that in its own way, the Torah wanted to hide the death of Rivka for various reasons, since the verse tells us via the death of her her nursemaid.
Yes, it hurts me a little bit.
He never got home to see his mother.
Right, his beloved mother, mother that loved him, that promised that he would come back. Yes, he's the mama's boy. That's absolutely right. That's right. And not only that, but this death of Dvorah in Beit El is going to foreshadow the next story,
yeah,
which is, wait a minute, hold on. Okay, so got through Lavan, got through Asaph, came back to the land. Oh, got through that whole Dina episode. Think about it. There's three women in this Torah portion that get like hurt or die or close women to him. His beloved daughter Dina raped, and the whole story of Shechem, which was unpleasant for him, obviously. His mother or his mother's nursemaid dies in Beit El. So this coming home, but at the homecoming, a bittersweet.
Well, there are things like you can't really ever come home.
Right.
There are things that you end up leaving behind by definition.
Right. And now let's make our final trek to see Papa in Chevron. And on the way there, in Bethlehem and Beit Lechem, on the road to Ephrata, that's heading south towards Chevron, suddenly his beloved wife, Rachel, who is with child. How exciting is that, right? How exciting is that?
So remember, exciting that when her first son, she prayed and gave his name, please give me another son.
Is that weird? Yeah. That is just...
That has a lot to do with who Yosef is, but we can talk about that when his story
comes
around.
To that, but that is just... first thing.
It might be a tough name to grow up with.
Right.
My mom named me because she wanted another.
Yeah, a friend of mine who is eccentric a bit, and he's a good friend of mine, he called his son Increase, which is
really?
Yosef. Yeah, yeah. Like, and there was an Increase Mather, you know, from the... You'll do a show about it one day. But in any case, like, there was these famous like people called Yosef, which is in English like Increase, and they call him Inky.
I'm sorry. I'm sure he's a wonderful person and
he
a
is.
Wonderful son.
I said he's, and he would admit it too. He's eccentric. He's a great guy and a good friend. By the way, I just forgot to say that Yaakov and Beitel gets that great blessing. Vayomer lo Elohim. God says to him, Ani El Shaddai. I am the God of fertility. That's the name of fertility. Kel Shakai, or that's the name we put on the mezuzot. Pre urve. Be fruitful, multiply. Goy v'kahal goyim yeh mimecha. A nation, a convocation of nations. I don't even know what that means, but I translate it that way because that's what it says in the book.
I was impressed.
Sunsino, right? You talked about Sunsino on one of your shows.
Yeah, sure. The power of printing.
Right. U'malachim mechaletzech etzeo. And kings shall issue forth from your loins.
Loins. Definitely. If you're going to have a convocation, you have to have loins.
Right. And we love loin here at the Land of Israel Network, because people that know that Land of Israel Network stands for loin.
Oh, I never even thought of that.
That's right. Land Land of Israel Network is loin, and therefore
we are biyotze chalatzea.
Right, so people who listen to this network are girders, okay?
Oh.
That's right, you girders.
Gird the loins. This is another way to ask for money.
That's right. Come on, everybody, gird the loins. Gird. And you got to say gird when you gird, okay?
I'm going to try that pitch sometime.
Yeah, loin. We're all about loin. That's right. Let's just quit while we're ahead here. In any case, speaking of loin, our beloved mother Rachel has birth complications, and as she is giving birth to this son that she's going to call Ben Oni, the son of my pain, the son of my tribulations, Jacob is going to call him Benjamin, the son of my right hand, and it says Vatamat Rachel. Rachel dies. V'tikaber b'derech Ephrata. She is buried on the way of Ephrat. He Beit Lechem. It is. It is Bethlehem. And it said the next verse, very important. Vayatzav Yaakov Matseva. Jacob puts a monument
marker,
on top of a
marker,
a mausoleum. Al Kvurata, on her burial place. He Matseva Kvurata Chel Adayom. It is the monument of the burial place of Rachel to this very day. That's what the Torah tells us. We're not going to go into a long discussion about this. I'm just going to say the bottom line is that place, which is Rachel's tomb today, is the place that Jacob buried Rachel back then, okay? And the other people who think differently are wrong. We'll talk about it a different time.
End of story.
End of story. Bottom line, I'm not going to waste a lot of time.
No, I wasn't going to argue with you.
Right. That's it, and that's a special, very special place. And then finally, there is the story of... there's a tough moment there with Reuven, the firstborn son, who it seems on the face of it lays with his father's handmaiden Bilha, but we understand that it really means that he was very upset about his father kind of moving
into Bilha's tent after Rachel died,
right, and not to his mother Leah,
right. Okay. It's actually an important point because it's one of these places as well where the rabbinic tradition seems to change the plain meaning of the text. You know, that it says that he slept with Bilha, but it's critical to remember that the Torah is about creating people who can know the world in the right way. It's not about pedantic factualism. And if it had said, and Reuven moved the bed of his father from, you know, Bilhah's tent to Leah's tent, nobody would be talking about it today. Right? There's one of the reasons that the sages read the Torah the way they did is because they understood that the impact of every word was to be for generations to come. In the same way, there's so much sort of harsh sensationalism in this parsha, and that's why it still matters to us today.
There is a harsh sensationalism. It is a harsh parsha.
It's a hard parsha. People die. There's violence. There's sexual violence. There's fear and
there's the death of loved ones.
And I really painful do stuff. Believe that it is in many ways an encapsulation of what one has to go through once you physically returned home to actually be there.
And so speaking of home, finally at the end, Yaakov does make it to Yitzchak, his father, where? In Mamre, which is Kiryat Arba, which is Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac lived. And Isaac dies. That's it.
Waiting.
He was there for that.
Yes.
And he was there for that. And at the end, basically, Esav and Jacob, very important here, Esav and Jacob are going to bury him. It's not going to say it exactly later. It'll say it, but it is. Jacob is going to say it, but it is in the Machpelah, also in Hebron. That is where Isaac and Rebekah are buried. And then the last part of the Parsha is actually a long listing of the families of Esau, of Esav, who he is, the families, the nation that he became.
And the kingdom. I mean, it's very important that it's an underlying theme of this Parsha is the fact that Esav holds the kingdom before Yaakov.
Right.
And the very idea of back in the parsha of the theft of the birthright of the bracha rather, right? That when Yitzchak says, "Ayadayim yidei Esav, akol kol Yaakov, ayadayim yidei Esav," that it's Yaakov's voice, but it's the hands of Esav. Is that the reason we get a kingship and a whole exposition of Esav's world here? Is that he is meant to build up the world before Yaakov comes into himself. It's a very important relationship there that needs to be explored.
Right. Okay, good. And we will explore it. We'll probably also explore it when we get a chance to speak about also Saul and David. There's a relationship between those two things, the initial creation and then the kind of putting in the spiritual or like another component into the creating of the vessel.
Just think about it in your own life. A person comes to physical maturity before they come to mental and emotional maturity.
For sure. I'm still waiting for that mental and spiritual maturity. Any case, folks... Rabbi Mike, I want to thank you so much.
You are so welcome.
It's great to see you.
It's great to see you back.
And coming back and hanging out with you is like coming back from the Galut and coming to Beit El and seeing your face. Guess seeing your face. Maybe he'll see my face, right? That's what it says in this week's Torah portion. So it's great to see you and hang out with you. And it's great to be back in the good land. But that does not mean, as we learned in this week's Torah portion, that it's bereft of tribulation. It has its challenges. And we have to love one another. I had an unpleasant thing happen this week a little bit. And I just wanted to say to that person, here in the land of Israel, we are meant to love one another. We have to give each other and not milk each other dry. But we have to give a love to one another and be a little bit more loving and helpful to one another. Don't forget, folks, kindness is one of the pillars of this world. We have to be kind to one another.
Amen.
Let's also thank our good friends and our sponsors of the show. First thing, I want to thank the good folks at Tchelet, T-E-K-H-E-L-E-T. com. And our good friend Arthur Alone has now taken upon himself to put on the Tchelet.
Woo-hoo!
And he is so excited. And as he said, it's a completely different...
It's a different zone.
It's a different kind of flying altogether.
Yep.
So he's a completely different place. Blue String, True Blue Jew. That's Rabbi Mike's great hashtag there. True Blue... And that's what he wrote to me. He wrote, "I'm a True Blue Jew," hashtag. That's the way. See, that's
awesome.
I love hashtag, by the way. What a concept. Like,
please don't name the show for people, Jewish Scalping.
Right. For people like me, like just the concept of hashtag, like this hashtag is this. It's great. I like the, you know, like your kids make trouble, you're like hashtag, you know, whatever.
Yeah, don't do it.
Yeah, don't do it. But I just love that stuff. My daughter's like, "What is a hashtag?" I'm like, "I can't explain to you. I have to explain to you what Twitter is and all that." Anyway, thank you very much, Tchelet. Thank you very much, Jay Brick. Jay Brick has just come out with their Mikdash set.
Yes, the third temple. You can build it yourself.
You can build it. If you build it, they will come and see it. Your neighbors will see how you killed the third temple. You can build it. And maybe if we all build a third temple in our house, the real third one will really be built.
Hearts.
Yeah, and it'll be out there. And also, we're going to start giveaways. Okay, we're going to start giveaways. If you want me to send you a Lego set, you have to write the following the subject line, me, and then in the email, I want a complimentary Lego set from Jaybrick.
Okay? Really?
Yes, a small one.
How many people?
Three.
First three people.
First three people. That's right. First three people. Good. Give me five. Nice.
Okay. Of course, you were about to shell out, my friend.
Right. No. First three people are going to get a complimentary something from Jay
Brick. I'm sending you an email right now.
Jewish Lego. You're not in the running.
Oh.
People who work for
Loin.
The Loin. That's right. The girders. Only the girders, not the loins, can actually get it. In any case, that's that. Jay Brick. Tchelet, what else we got? We got Hebron Fund. We have a big matching campaign this week, this Sunday night in America. A charity campaign, charity with a D campaign. Please join us, and every dollar of yours is going to equal $4.
Who's Hebron, the us? That's
Hebron Fund, the Jewish community of Hebron, which is sponsored by the American Friends of, which is the Hebron Fund. Please join us for an amazing charity campaign. It'll help us so very much. Of course, Loin, listen to the Land of Israel Network. And there are other supporters. Oh, my friends at Janglo, of course. My good friends at Janglo, which create a knowledge for us about how to make it in this land. They bring sweetness to the land and help you buy those American products that you need so much to make it, like Captain Crunch. Any case, that's what happens at our good friends at Janglo. Rabbi Mike, I want to thank you so much. I want to thank Sulam Yaakov, and I want to thank you out there. Please write me an email, yishai@thelandofisrael.com, yishai@thelandofisrael.com. Visit my Facebook page, my Twitter, where I fight with bad guys all the time. And all the other networks connect to us. Rabbi Mike, you are facebook.com/Rav Mike, and you have right now a program to get 36 new supporters for your show, The Jewish Story, here at the network.
That's right.
Please listen to the beginning of the show, patreon.com, R-Foyer. M-Foyer. I'm trying to remember things. I'm trying to look at my... No, Rabbi.
Oh.
Who's R? Anyway, and of course, folks, we learned in this week's Torah portion that we purchased the land of Israel in Shechem, and we remember the purchase of the Ma'arat HaMachpelah. We remember the burial of the tomb of Rachel. These places are anchors in the land of Israel.
Come visit. Real people.
That's right. Real places, real people. Real stories of real things. Connect to them on a real level. Make them part of your life. Build a Beit HaMikdash in your house. Put a picture of the tomb of Rachel. But of course, come here. Start planning your trip for Pesach and for the summer. Start making that happen. Take that money and say, what is money for if not to come to the land of Israel? I want to bless you here from the land of Israel and from the Land of Israel Network. Rabbi Mike, thanks again.
Always a pleasure. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom, everybody. God bless you. Stay strong. Stay tuned. Stay connected. And shalom.
We believe and affirm that the Messiah will come, says the Rambam in the 12th of his 13 principles. If he delays, wait for him. He will surely come. Now, I wouldn't presume to know how this story ends, but I've been telling it since what I see to be the beginning. I'm Rav Mike Foyer, and this is The Jewish Story.
Listen to The Jewish Story with Rav Mike Foyer on thelandofisrael.com.